Clear your mind.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, dear listeners. Thank you so very much for joining us on today's brand new episode of Muslim Lady. As always, it's my pleasure and absolute honor to be joined by my special guest and darling sister, Sister Razia Shamili. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah, my dear sister Zainab.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Really absolute honored. Pleasure. So on the previous episode, we were discussing the topic of cohabitation. We defined it as a couple, a man and a woman living with each other with no religious or legal contracts and bounds.
No formal contract.
Yes, no formal contract.
But there are some commitments between
yes,
the
Yes, there
two.
Are some commitments, right? They're your person.
Yeah.
They're your significant other. They're your partner.
You divide the household chores. You communicate when you have problems. Mm-hmm. But then the concern and the issue is that all these compared with a married life, how much depth can you get out of these the elements that I just counted compared in a cohabitation and a married life?
Obviously, if we're looking at it from an Islamic perspective, cohabitation is not even a possibility for a man and a woman. I mean, if you're going to live together, go ahead and get married. If you're not married, you have no business living together.
Based on contracts and Islamic rules and Sharia, there is no place. Mm. But when you look at the reality of societies, this has become a trend. This has become a very popular issue. The next question is that, so what are the consequences of cohabitation on the society, on the individuals, on married life, on families? We said that there is better communication. There is more satisfactory communication in marriage. And we said why compared to cohabitation. And their spouses or partners' approach to parenting. Mm. This is another variable that in married couple, the partner's approach to parenting is more satisfactory in a marriage compared to cohabitation. Obviously, because you see yourself committed and, you know, it's like it's your responsibility. You brought this child. Of course, in cohabitation, it's your biological child, too. But it's interesting, subhanAllah, that just the name or just the feeling or just the definition that you have of it in your mind makes an influence in the way
Obviously.
You treat your child.
Yeah, because it's a conscious decision. I don't think there was any time through history where human beings were ever negligent toward the importance of making conscious decisions in order to, number one, actualize a concept, and secondly, give it significance in terms of the rank in one's life. When you make a conscious decision to make this person your own and make yourself belong to this person and become one with them and reproduce and have a family, and that conscious decision that was put into it and the active effort that you exert, well, that's going to make a whole world of difference. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Muslim Lady here on IRIB English Radio. We're going to be back after a short break. Stay with us.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Muslim Lady.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. This is Muslim Lady. And in the studio today, we've been talking about the hot topic of cohabitation, its definitions, its pros and cons, and where it is in terms of constructiveness for the well-being of the individual and the family as a whole in comparison, and the society in comparison to marriage.
Right. And we talked about when you undergo consciously, when you decide to undergo the contract of marriage, the formal contract of marriage, then you're more responsible, it seems, of parenting. And then as a woman, I'm just thinking that when you are when you're cohabiting with someone, and then there's always the chance, in marriage, there's always the chance of getting divorced too. Mm. But then divorce is a big thing that happens. It just doesn't happen like that. But cohabitation, you can just...
Rather than your significant other walking off.
Exactly.
Day.
Say, honey, you're very good. You're very cool. You're a respectful
person. But then,
yeah,
see, I understand what you said.
But then I'm going to say that there is still difference in my perspective.
Yeah, exactly. Because you said that God knows if deep down there isn't really a difference. There is.
There is difference.
Right. Because in the corrupt society, family means absolutely nothing. I'm not saying Western or Eastern. I'm saying a corrupt society where family means absolutely nothing. And one of the partners can just wake up one morning and walk out of the family. Who doesn't understand the sanctity of marriage does not receive its privileges either.
You're right.
Right?
Even though it's really much harder to get a divorce than to just walk out of someone's life. Mm. But then, as you said, there are a lot of irresponsible individuals who really don't care about the other person's feelings and, you know, like what the consequences of divorce. But I think still in comparison, divorce happens much harder than just walking out of someone's life.
Oh, yeah. It's
exactly. And the consequences of a divorce, it could be for several years. Depression, your self-confidence that goes away,
the healing process
is a very long process. Whereas in the cohabitation, you every single day you tell yourself that this is a temporary relationship. It's not a marriage thing. He's not committed to me for life. You keep telling it to yourself. So once he walks out of your life, or once she walks out of his life, then the acceptance of the issue is, of course, easier. But I'm saying that in terms of the relationship between the couple, because a woman wants to get satisfied, it's a psychological thing rather than like a physical thing, you know? So like the satisfaction of a woman who knows that she's in a secure, supported relationship, that he is having her back all the time, and that he's by her side in difficult times and in ease, in good times and in bad times, then she has more peace of mind.
For sure.
She has more sense of security.
Security.
And the most important thing in a person's life is this feeling of security that from the first moment that we are brought to this life by our mother, the psychologists say that later on, all the complexities, all the disorders that happen to you is out of this one single root, this feeling of insecurity. Whether they don't show their love to you, whether they beat you up, or whether they don't even beat you up, but the way they look at you, the way they talk to you, the way they title you, right? Or when you're crying, you're very small, and soon mommy rushes to you and she holds you, she embraces you, and she shows her love to you. It might seem to be very trivial and not important, but that means building the sense of security in that child. Yep. And this continues up until the time that you get married.
Yep,
right?
Yep, of course.
And I think a happy marriage is one where you have this feeling of security. Mm. And marriage, of course, is a bond. It's a relationship where you have, if it's a proper marriage, you know, based on the proper grounds and roots, then you would have more feeling of security.
Obviously, yeah.
Right.
Absolutely.
And this verse in the Noble Quran where Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, women are your garments and men are women's garments. So this libas thing, this garment thing is a protection. And we talked about it in one of our sessions.
Yep.
How, you know, the same way that clothes cover you and you know, make you feel good and secure in the hot weather, in the cold weather, or when you're going somewhere to a party where it's a very respected gathering and you want to wear something to like show that you're a respected person, your spouse is exactly the same. And this isn't anything more than this feeling of security.
For sure.
Feeling safe. Yep. And sound.
Mm.
And once you have this safe and sound feeling, then your contribution to the family will be so much more. Your contribution to the society, you as a daughter, mother, wife, father, and, you know, all the relationship that you have in the circle of your life, it will flourish just because you feel more secure.
Surely.
So the the next point that we want to talk about is that, interestingly, married adults are also more likely than cohabitors to say that they feel closer to their spouses. SubhanAllah, this is amazing. Because, of course, the relationship looks exactly the same. Mm-hmm. You go out together, you eat together, you sleep together, you go to vacations together, you go shopping together, you do everything together. But then this feeling, I think it goes back again to the root of insecurity, that you in the back of your mind, like, I might leave him, right? But then it's a defense mechanism. That when you're in a cohabiting relationship, you try not to really get close to that person because you're scared of being heartbroken, mm-hmm. right? But in marriage, you lean on him. Mm. You say, oh, this is my guy. This is my husband, right? And I put my trust on him. Of course, if it's the right marriage, not the marriages that you're just roommates under the same roof. But then your hearts are distant, are miles and miles away from one another.
True.
So this is another difference. And one more thing that I wanted to share with you is that most married and cohabiting adults cite love and companionship as the major reason why they decided to get married or move into together with their partner. The number one factor that joins or unites the two of you is love, right? But about 4 in 10 cohabitors also say finances, that's very interesting, and conveniences were important factors in their decision. So material standards or factors placed in a high position in the relationship of cohabitors. Whereas in according to statistics, finances and conveniences were not one of the top reasons that people decide to get married. Love and companionship is the major reason. It's the number one reason people decided to be together. This is just amazing. It just talks by itself.
Yep.
That I'm with you because my interest is with you. You pay part of my bills. You provide my sexual needs. You provide my emotional needs. Right? I'm sharing my room with you. I pay less rent. We go shopping. We split the cost of our grocery shopping. You know, there's material benefit for me. So this is heartbreaking. It brings insecurity in your life. This monetary factor is with you. You're going to be together. Then when things change, then this relationship is going to alter. It's going to be shift to another direction, right?
Right. That was interesting, and that was all the time that we have for today's episode. Thank you so very much for joining us. Until another salam, I leave you in the care and protection of the Almighty.
Who is the Lover?
Allah.
Who is Ar-Rahman?
Allah.
Who is Al-Mannan?
La ilaha illallah. Muhammadur Rasulullah. Muhammad is the messenger. To Allah is our return.
The Quran, given by God to Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him and his family, more than 1400 years ago, as guidance for humanity. Quran speaks about women.
The Quran teaches the equality of men and women in the eyes of Allah.
Chapter 33, verse 35.
All praise is due to the one and only. He is the master of all creation.
Modesty and chastity are encouraged by the Quran, both for women and for men.
Chapter 24, verses 30 and 31.
He is the sustainer and the maintainer of the whole universe.
God created us from one male and one female and made us into nations and tribes so that we make to know one another, not to despise each other.
Chapter 49, verse 13.
La ilaha illallah, Muhammadur Rasulullah, Muhammad is the messenger, to Allah is our return.
The Quran has indicated worthy women in history just as it has mentioned such men, and has commended them greatly.
Chapter 3, verse 37.
Food for thought.
Salam, dear friends, and here is fresh food for thought for you today in the form of an excellent aphorism from Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. May I lead you to the best moralities of this world and the life to come? These moralities are to regard him who disregarded you, give him who deprived you of his bestowals, and pardon him who wronged you.
Fiqh
or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
Self-purification is the most significant factor.
Imamat yek asle zinde ast dar tarikh Islam.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism. This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a shorter speech by Hujjatul Islam Ali. Stay tuned. Bringing justification or excuse for a sin is worse than committing a sin itself. For instance, you backbite someone and claim that such a person deserves being backbitten. This justification of a sin is much worse than the very act of sinning.
تو روایاتمون چند تا عنوان داریم که از خود گناه بدتره.
In our narrations we are warned about some deeds which are worse than committing a sin. For example, in the book Tuhaf al-Uqul we have a narration by Imam Ali alayhi salam in which he refers to four of such actions which are even worse than the sin itself. These four deeds are insistence on doing a sin, belittling a sin, being proud in doing a sin, and finally, being happy in committing a sin. All these four deeds are worse than the sin itself, according to Imam Ali alayhi salam. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Ali. To find out more about this program, log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en, Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Cultural news, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With delight.
There is a lot to be worried about when it comes to the climate. An Indian auto rickshaw driver in the capital New Delhi has come up with an innovative idea to beat the scorching heat wave. He has built a garden on the roof of his vehicle to keep passengers cool. Mahendra Kumar's vehicle, dubbed Moving Garden, stands out among others with its unique rooftop. He has grown vegetables, flowers and a variety of herbs and shrubs and a small roof space. Kumar says it was easy to make the garden by spreading a thick sack over a mat and covering it with soil. Then he added the plants, watered them, and watched them grow.
Around 2 years ago, I had this idea during the peak of the summer season. I thought if I can grow some plants on the roof, it will keep my auto rickshaw cool and give relief from the heat to my passengers.
Kuma says the thick green keeps his three-wheeler cool even when temperatures reach 45 degrees Celsius. The rickshaw driver has also installed small fans inside for the comfort of passengers as an extra measure. His passengers say they feel cool because of the natural air conditioner. Kuma's rickshaw attracts many commuters for obvious reasons, and passers-by also stop to take selfies. A museum in France is hosting treasures of Peru, including the famed Machu Picchu, in a unique experience where technology meets archaeology. Visitors can immerse themselves in a vertical tour of Machu Picchu Citadel and see an exclusive exhibit of Peruvian archaeological objects. The collection is arranged chronologically, passing through the extraordinary diversity of some 13 cultures. The collection displays 200 artifacts spanning three millennia, dating as far back as 1500 BC. A large part of the exhibit is dedicated to Peru's Machica civilization with their vase portraits and red ceramics. The museum's curator says the goal was to show that pre-Columbus Peru was far deeper than just the Inca era. These days, it's easier than ever to get lost in the virtual world. A unique museum in the U.S. is using augmented reality for visitors to plug into a thrilling experience about the Earth's environmental challenges. The New York Museum is called Arcadia Earth. It offers a large-scale, multisensorial journey through underwater worlds, mountains, savannas, and inspirational fantasy lands. Each exhibit is brought to life through immersive technology and animated by augmented and virtual reality, including projection mapping. One installation is made of 44,000 plastic bags, the amount used in New York every minute before a plastic bag ban was implemented. The museum founder says the goal is to raise awareness about the impacts of climate change in a fun way.
The intention is to inspire people to come and leveraging game and immersive beauty to deliver a message. And I think that if this technique were to be used in school, we will so learn much more and every kid will want to go to school. And at the end of the day, the purpose is just to deliver the message. The tools are just techniques. So I really think that this technique, it's super fun and will work for everyone.
Vittori added that the experience is meant to encourage people to be proactive in protecting the planet. The exhibit also spotlights other environmental challenges such as overfishing and food waste. Proceeds from tickets sold are used to plant mangrove trees. This exhibit has been held in several cities across the United States, and each time proceeds have been used to support various environmental causes. Appearing like something straight out of a sci-fi movie, this Gundam-style robot lifts off special equipment and carries out maintenance work on out-of-reach railway contact lines in Japan. Developed by West Japan Railway Company JR West and two other Japanese companies, The humanoid robot can conduct repair work on overhead wires, which are considered high risk for humans. According to J.R. West, a prototype of this robot can be controlled by human operators through VR helmets and remote controls. It can lift objects up to 40 kilograms in weight with two hands to a height of 10 meters. It was designed to lower the risk of electrocution and falling for workers. The company says it can cut down human labor by a third. The company has been conducting tests since April and expects to put the robot into full service by early 2024.
A child-sized doll screams and rolls its eyes while lying on a table as engineer Hiroki Takimoto looks on calmly. But instead of being a child's toy, the doll is a humanoid robot mimicking critical medical symptoms designed to train dental workers. The robot was co-developed by Japanese robotic startups Team Sock and a local dental school. Pediaroid was designed to stimulate a child's responses when receiving dental treatment, including changes to its medical condition. Using a tablet programmed with different medical conditions, the user is able to send signals to air cylinders installed within the robot's joints to move its entire body, mouth, and tongue to display physical reactions and facial expressions.
Medical workers really need to experience medical emergencies. It's important that they experience a situation where something goes wrong, and that's what it can simulate. As for the future, we would like to further develop it in such a way that various other people who are involved with childcare, such as mothers, elementary school teachers, childcare workers, and nurses, can experience emergency simulations.
Director of Team Sock's engineering division, Yusuke Ishii, said the robot was developed due to the lack of clinical dental training to treat children. Currently, at a hefty price tag of about 25 million Japanese yen, Team Sock hopes to develop the hyper-realistic robot further such that people from other childcare industries, including pediatricians and elementary school teachers, would be able to use it for other emergency situation training.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Iran has hosted an iftar dinner in support of Palestine amid a rise in Israel's violence against Palestinian worshippers at the Al-Aqsa Mosque during the holy month of Ramadan. Yusuf Jalali reports from Tehran. Let's check it out.
Turn the pot over to let the tasty maqluba slip into the dish. Maqluba is a Palestinian upside-down rice, usually cooked with chicken or lamb. Now, these Iranian and Lebanese women have taken part in a group cooking of maqluba as a solidarity gesture with Palestinian women amid the escalation of the Israeli violence against Palestinian worshippers at Al-Aqsa Mosque. They say maqluba is not just a delicious food, but a symbol of the downfall of Israel.
Maqluba is indigenous to the Levant area, such as Lebanon, Syria, and especially Palestine. The last stage of the food's recipe is to run over the pot that contains the food. Today, it has become a symbol of victory for Al-Quds and a defeat for Israel.
Turning over the pot symbolizes the downfall of Israel. Interestingly, Israel has imposed a ban on the entry of pots into Al-Aqsa Mosque since they have come to learn about what it means to turn over the maqluba pots.
Since the start of the month of Ramadan, Israeli forces have been assaulting Muslim worshippers at the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound, injuring scores of people. The escalation in tensions has drawn worldwide condemnation, with protesters calling on the UN to take action. to end the regime's crackdown against Palestinians.
Palestine is for Palestinians. Israel has been repeating its barbaric behavior towards Palestinians since 7 decades ago, and today it has taken its violence to another level by doubling down on its use of force. I think they are angered by Palestinians' resistance, and that's why they have resorted to violence.
This humanitarian move is one of tens of solidarity gestures staged in Iran and worldwide in support of Palestinians. The event also comes ahead of the International Quds Day, a global pro-Palestine rally that takes place every year on the last Friday of the month of Ramadan.
Enjoy the maghluba and wish Palestinians good luck in their struggle against occupation. Chefs here say, aside from symbolizing the victory of Al-Quds against occupation, this event seeks to raise awareness of the Palestinian suffering and to call on other nations to jump on the wagon and voice their support for Palestine's resistance. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Iran's National Museum is displaying a collection of artifacts that was stolen decades ago but has finally returned home after a long legal battle. The items, which include sacred figurines, pots and jars, date back to more than 3,000 years ago. They were stolen and sent to the West more than 4 decades ago. In 1991, the British Museum was seeking to buy the collection from a smuggler residing in Switzerland. The objects, however, were seized by Swiss police and revealed in court in 2008. Since then, Iran had been trying to get the stolen treasures back home.
Under pressure from the Iranian diplomatic apparatus and the official complaints of the National Museum in 2015, the legal process continued, and finally on December 20, 2020, the collection returned to us.
The collection belongs to the northwestern city of Bukhan, which was the home of Manians around the 10th to 7th centuries BC. The Manians were one of the first nomadic tribes to build cities in that area. The director of Iran's National Museum says the effort to recover other stolen artifacts continues. The country is now holding talks with the U.S. and Australia to return ancient objects smuggled over there.
How long could you work at your job? In Brazil, a 100-year-old man has broken the world record for the longest spell working at a single company. Walter Orthman has entered the Guinness World Record books for working at the same fabric company for an astonishing period of 84 years. He started on the factory floor before moving into administration and later on into the sales management. Despite his extraordinary accomplishment, Orthman's advice for those looking for a long and fulfilling professional life is surprisingly routine.
You have to like to work. I started to work with that willingness and fighting spirit. You also have to start working on something you like to do. You can't just do any job to say that you're working. That doesn't work. You're not going to be able to stand it. You have to look for a job that you like to do. And there, you won't even feel the time passing. That's what happened with me. I started working here, and I liked it. I worked my way up from point to point until I got to the position I'm in today.
Ortman says his secret to a long life and breaking the record is having a healthy lifestyle and staying away from junk food. He says he avoids sugar and salt as much as possible and tries to keep a diet that is healthy for the mind and soul. In order to stay sharp, Orthman says he does stretches and maintains physical activity.
Today's special.
Assalamu alaikum.
It's special for you. We present to you today
Raditu billahi rabba
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of Allah, the Most Compassionate, the Most Merciful. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, today's special, Salaamu Alaikum, so welcome to this episode of today's special. Please be with us.
Ya Rabbi, Ya Rahman, Ya Mubdi'a al-Akwan, Ya Rabbi, Ya Rahman, Ya Mubdi'a al-Akwan, Ilayka qalban, Yadhubu hubban, بالنور والإيمان إليك قلبا يذوب حبا بالنور والإيمان بالنور والإيمان.
Today Thursday is the 3rd of Shawwal 1443 of the Islamic Lunar Hijri calendar, corresponding to the 15th of Ordibehesht 1401 of the Islamic Solar Hijri calendar, and the 5th of May 2022 of the Christian Gregorian calendar. We bless this moment by chapter Ar-Rahman, verses 43 to 47 in the Holy Quran.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. Hadhihi jahannam allati yukadhibu biha al-mujrimun.
This is hell, which the criminals deny.
يطوفون بينها وبين حميم آن.
They will go around between it and scalding water, heated to the utmost degree.
فبأي آلاء ربكما تكذبان.
So which of the favors of your Lord would you deny?
وَلِمَنْ خَافَ مَقَامَ رَبِّهِ جَنَّتَانِ.
But for he who has feared the position of his Lord are two gardens.
فَبِأَيِّ آلَاءِ رَبِّكُمَا تُكَذِّبَانِ.
So which of the favors of your Lord would you deny?
لا إله إلا الله لا إله إلا الله.
Bless your day with contemplation on the verses of the Holy Quran.
Denial of paradise, hell and resurrection lead men to join the people of hell. It is as if angels or guards of hell say unto sinners that this is hell against which prophets warned you, but you denied and belied it out of arrogance, vanity, enmity, and ignorance. The blessed verse 44 further depicts hell and its excruciating torment, saying that sinners move between hell and boiling water. As the previous episodes of today's special, we continue this topic, keeping the spirit of Ramadan alive. The month of Ramadan is the month of hope and mercy. Throughout this month, we have intensified our worship, devoted ourselves, mind, body, and soul to the Almighty, and enlightened our spirits in the way of Islam. We fasted, made regular dua, offer charity to the less fortunate, and just increased our good deeds in general. But just as all good things must come to an end, Ramadan is only 30 days long.
Muslims all over the world feel the loss. The warmth of Ramadan eventually fades and we are left slipping back into old bad habits. Ramadan gives us all the extra incentive to act on our faith and grow closer to Allah. But something that many people often forget is that we have the capacity to spread the spirit of Ramadan throughout the world all year long.
Dr. Fakhr Rohani.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim wa bin astain. In this episode, we are going to talk about what to do and what not to do in order to preserve the blessings of the month of Ramadan. By doing this, we find that when we are in the state of fasting, not only from the point of eating or drinking, we observe fasting. However, the effects of fasting should be observable in all the jobs and practices we do. At the same time, we find that piety is one of the important parameters and yardsticks in the month of Ramadan, piety. Because one of the aims of fasting is practicing religious piety. And if someone doesn't eat anything or drink anything, yet, for example, he or she continues backbiting or, for example, spreading rumors about other people, this isn't good and this isn't a good act and it should be avoided, strictly avoided. In this connection, it must be indicated that according to the instructions of the fifth infallible Imam, Muhammad al-Baqir alayhi salam, most likable jobs before Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is a small job, is a little job, okay, that's continued throughout the year and, all over and over. It isn't, from this, it can be inferred that if someone, for example, recites the longest surah in the Holy Quran just once a year, it isn't, it's good, but it isn't enough. But if he keeps reciting a very, short surah in the Holy Quran and continues reciting it throughout the whole year, and the act may take only just a few minutes, the second one is more likable and more recommended to do.
Special topics for a special program. You can listen today, now and here, IRIB English Radio. Today's special.
I love this part because it suggests us the ways to practice Ramadan values throughout the year. One step is seeking forgiveness. Besides feeling anger, we also make mistakes on a spiritual and personal level. We should continue to seek forgiveness whenever we do wrong, as it heals our souls and protects our relationships. So, seek spiritual forgiveness in your prayers and du'as. If you make a mistake, apologize and seek to fix your error as soon as possible. Remember to apologize for the little things too, like bumping into someone, forgetting to call or accidentally interrupting a conversation. It builds empathy and helps you be more mindful. It is absolutely okay to seek forgiveness from those younger than you, for example, for raising your voice at your children, even if they did something in error. Ramadan is over, but we continue looking at the health benefits of fasting backed by science, may boost brain function and prevent neurodegenerative disorders. Though research is mostly limited to animal research, several studies have found that fasting could have a powerful effect on brain health. One study in mice showed that practicing intermittent fasting for 11 months improved both brain function and brain structure. Other animal studies have reported that fasting could protect brain health and increase the generation of nerve cells to help enhance cognitive function. Because fasting may also help relieve inflammation, it could also aim in preventing neurodegenerative disorders.
So if we want to maintain our spirituality, first we have to understand what it takes to be spiritual to begin with. You know, sometimes we think spirituality is this exotic branch of Islam and there's a secret that we have to figure out, as if it's some type of code that we have to decipher. You know, sometimes we think that, you know, I just need that. There's a secret dua that I need to get my hands on. And if I recite that dua, then I'll become a spiritual person. Spirituality, brothers and sisters, it begins with fulfilling the wajibat and avoiding the muharramat. You know, sometimes we make it more complicated than it needs to be. And you will never taste true spirituality as long as you're committing sins. You know, it's comparable to someone who eats junk food and goes to the gym and works out. Someone like that, you know, as they say, you know, 80% of fitness is about what you eat, right? You can spend hours and hours in the gym, but if you're not eating healthy food, then you're not going to be able to develop muscle. You're not going to be able to be healthy. You're not going to look like a healthy person. Similarly, if we are committing haram, even if we recite Dua Kumail and we recite all of these supplications, but we're not making any effort to avoid the muharramat, it's not going to have an impact. You know, there's a beautiful story about Imam al-Baqir and Imam al-Sadiq. So Imam al-Baqir, the father, and Imam al-Sadiq, the son, they're in Mecca. And they're performing tawaf. Imam al-Sadiq was young. And Imam al-Sadiq was performing a mustahab tawaf. And he was sweating and there was a lot of crowds and he was exerting himself in the performance of a recommended act. Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam, he saw his son, Imam al-Sadiq, sweating. He's putting so much effort into fulfilling this recommended act. And Imam al-Baqir, he puts his hand on his shoulder and he says, "Oh, my son, you don't need to go above and beyond. You don't need to put that much more effort if you have taqwa." If you have taqwa. Meaning, if you avoid the muharramat and you do your wajibat, it doesn't take very much beyond that to please Allah.
Inshallah, we continue our topic that was keeping the spirit of Ramadan alive on the another episode of today's special. Until then, we keep you in Allah's protection. Fi amanillah.
Ya rajai, ya rajai, ya rajai.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.